Hey, that's my theme for 9 o'clock, Monday through Thursday, but Friday is a special day. We start at 10. Thank you for the good show from 9 to 10. That's been on for over 10 years. We are in studio on a beautiful day. The date is the 17th day of, that's an important date for me. 8/17/68 is when I moved to Northfield. How about that? Anyhow, it's 2018. I have a friend in studio today, a gentleman that has served our district well for several terms, but has decided not to run for his position as a state legislator this fall, and his name is David Bly. David,
good morning.
It's a pleasure to see you. Thank you for coming in.
You bet.
I was thinking, how I'm going to talk today, what's an hour going to do and all the experience that you have. We've done your lifetime at least once, so I want to just talk about your retirement from the legislator.
Okay.
And you got a lot of memories, a lot of positive things, some negative things. So I thought we'll go with the good, the bad, and the ugly. And for those of you that are younger than 50, the good, the bad, and the ugly has a great tune, by the way. So what do you want to talk about first? Because I know that every one of those, you and the legislature has done good things and maybe bad things that you didn't vote for or you didn't vote against. And then some of the ugly things that go on, the political stuff that when you're a rookie, get in line and go vote for the party line, stuff like that. So, where do you want to start?
Well, maybe in a general way.
Okay.
It really helps to, if you want to get things done, to be in the majority, although not always. And I think I served at least three terms in the majority. And then a couple in the minority. So the last two terms, Democrats have been in the minority. It's a little tougher to get things through. This last biennium, I didn't have a single bill that I introduced heard in a committee. They weren't hearing Democrats, so that was frustrating. But when you're in the majority, bills that you carry do get a hearing, and they go forward if you can muster the votes. You don't always necessarily have the support of your majority fellows if you... one of the bills I'm perhaps most proud of had bipartisan support, and I had to get... and bipartisan opposition as well. So, I had to convince enough Republicans to go with the Democrats that I'd persuaded and pass something, and that had to do with making sure that landowners had protections in place when, say, a power line or some other thing comes through their property, and you want to make sure that the entity building the power lines treats them fairly, gives them a fair price for the land that they're taking through eminent domain.
And why did you pursue that? And happily, it succeeded. But why did you pursue that? Was there a constituent that
yes,
was
yeah,
in
there,
the situation?
There were several constituents who came to me. It was also something that I was interested in. I happened to be on the Energy Committee at that time, and I was interested in promoting renewable energy. And one of the concerns about the power line that I heard from folks is that and in addition to being in favor of renewable energy, I was in favor of distributed generation, which means that you try to place the production of energy closer to where it's going to be used. And so you don't necessarily need huge power lines to transport it from one place to another. And the concern was that the power line was being built to move energy produced in the Dakotas to the Chicago market, coming right through Minnesota. And, that's not a fact, that's a debatable sort of issue, but that was a concern. I don't want to misrepresent it. But I'm sure that there was some usage of the power line locally. People who were opposed to it were saying, no, that they're going to ship that bulk load of power and try to compete in the Chicago market. And it seemed to me that if that was the case, it was not fair to mistreat landowners or try to get by too cheaply and not offer them something that was going to be worthwhile if they're going to be making profits off of energy.
Is this a power line that starts out west and through Elko, and then it goes through Dakota County, and then it goes down south. 52?
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
These big, huge ones?
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
And were you successful then? Do you feel that it actually made a difference?
It did make a difference, yes. We did get into law that the utilities have to follow certain rules in dealing with property owners to make sure that they get a fair market price and an appeal process that they can make if they feel they were dealt with unfairly.
Okay, now, I think a person my age, and you're probably... 50,
I'm 66.
Okay. Oh, you're not, you don't look it. Wow. Okay. But you start thinking about a legacy that you're going to leave, whether you're a musician or teacher or broadcaster or, you know, a guy that made the manufacturing easier on the people in the factory. You want to leave a legacy, and with your family, of course.
Yeah.
So is that going to be part of the, when you're sitting by yourself thinking about your life, which we all do, is that something you say, no, that's a legacy. 100 years from now, people will say, wow, thank you, David, for not disturbing our farm and making our cows less productive,
like
when Wellstone had his big rally over on 86.
Yeah, and there was certainly work that Paul Wellstone did, you mentioned him, that influenced me as well, that there was something, there were things there that he uncovered in trying to defend folks. That was important to me too, but you know, I guess I'm not someone who's necessarily always thinking about how great I am, you know. So the legacy issue is not perhaps top on my mind. I'm sure it's there somewhere. I'm sure I have some ego that I have to feed, but it's not something I think a lot about right now. Maybe I will later in my life. I don't know. But this is something I am proud of, yes. And I was pleased that people who I didn't know, who either lived in my district or didn't, would come up to me and say, thank you. You know, that was really important what you did. And it wasn't easy. You know, I had to be willing to buck the all the lobbyists that Xcel Energy has and the others that didn't want to see this go through, that wanted to compromise other things away that had been fought for and won. And so it was not an easy thing to do. And fortunately, Senator Dahl helped me with that as well on the Senate side. I couldn't do it just in one body. You had to do it in both. So it is something that I'm really quite proud of.
Well, because you're retiring and the fact that you served 10 years for five terms, okay, I never saw your name in a news report. Where, you know, in the paper, on TV, or radio. How come that is? I mean, is it hard to get the attention of the media, or some people just have the ego and want to get in front of the
camera?
Yeah,
I think that's part of it. I mean, I remembering seeing people in the legislature, there are certain legislators who hang around the reporters and will try to get that. Their name in the paper and things like that. I never did that. So, I mean, the closest I came, I suppose, to doing that was when we were in the minority and I was able to get something passed when the turkey industry was hit by that disease. I introduced a bill to make sure that funding got, you know, to the researchers, to the people who needed to do the work to protect those farmers from further spread of that disease. And that's a time when I did seek out press because I knew I would have to in order to get it further. It was interesting to me that after I did get it pushed through, then the other side of the aisle decided to do a press conference, even though they were ignoring the problem when I was trying to talk about it, and got a lot of, you know, kind of a front page story in the Minneapolis Star Tribune saying all that they were doing. Well, they might not have done anything if I hadn't pushed them to do it, you know. So, but I didn't get that same kind of credit. I did get on the Almanac show one time.
Oh, good for you.
I wasn't necessarily seeking that for my own name. I was trying to push that initiative that I felt was really important. That this kind of infection is not something you want to play around with. You want to make sure that you stop it before it gets further. And so I just felt like it was really important to try to take care of that.
David Bly is my guest this morning. He has represented our district for 10 years. And is it hard to get recognized on the floor? You're a kind man. You're not confrontational. You have deep convictions. So I'm wondering if you are able to, at your desire, to get on the floor and really push it and get the attention you want, because there's so many of you and so many want to talk. And is it the leader, the power party that calls on you or ignores you?
Yeah, that's correct. The speaker, whoever's in the speaker's chair, can decide whether or not they're going to recognize you or not. They usually get some bad flack if they don't recognize someone, but they can always say, "Well, I didn't see you," you know. there have been times when I've been overlooked. There are times when you have to stand up and say, "Mr. Speaker," you know. Other times, though, I've held back. There are times when I had something to say, and I chose to let other people say it. So it's you know, again, I'm not the kind of person that has to have that attention. But there are times when I stood up and said things that were really important. When we were back in the Palenty years, when we were cutting, there was a cut to, and we were in the majority, so we were making the proposal, so it wasn't just necessarily just a Republican cut. It was actually the majority was cutting back on workers who work with the disabled, the pay that goes to them. Not many people realize
that. I'm familiar with that.
The state of Minnesota does decide how much money to give to nursing homes and other places like Epic.
Well, I have personally lobbied.
I know you have.
Not a registered lobbyist, lobbied for LBSA.
Yeah. I know that.
Okay.
And thank you for doing that. At any rate, so I stood up and I challenged my own leadership. I said, "We can't do this." And I think gave a moving speech. And then I had agreed with the leadership to make my case and then sit down, you know, so that I wouldn't embarrass them by demanding a vote, which might have passed. So I did that, and then a Republican stood up, grabbed my amendment, and passed it and got the credit.
Wow. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. That kind of irked you a little bit?
Well, a little bit. You know, I mean, when you have an amendment that you make, you like to be in control of it.
Right,
But it was a lesson to me that if you're going to do that, you know, if you're going to step back, the other side can always pick it up and do something with it. So you want to be cautious about that, too.
A lot of them like to get up and speak because they like to hear themselves talk.
That's true.
Now, if you're in a crowd of six people and you're not as a legislator, socially, and you're in a crowd of six people and telling jokes or whatever, and the quiet person listens, and then the other ones are all quabbling or whatever you call it, and then when that quiet one says, "Hey, I have a joke," or "Hey, here's my opinion," everybody shuts up because he's a quiet or she's a quiet person. And when they talk, people listen because they don't talk too much.
Yeah.
Is that kind of a way it helped
you?
Well,
I can tell you a story from my 11th grade history class.
Okay.
Where I spoke about, I think we were talking about our different projects we were doing, and I was talking about the Chinese Revolution, which I had written a very long report on. And when I said, I rarely spoke in the class, so when I spoke, you could have heard a pin drop, just like you're saying.
Yep.
And afterwards, one of my friends said to me, you know, because you don't talk very much, when you talk, everybody listens.
Yeah.
You
know? So yeah. would that be the case up there in St. Paul?
I think that it can be, yes.
Okay.
I think that, and also people who don't often speak, but get up, and when they do speak, you realize they probably have something that's really burning in them to say. So I think people do listen more carefully to when someone talks rather than just, you know, someone who has something to say, an opinion about everything, and they have
right.
to get it out.
I know exactly what you mean. It's 20 minutes after 9 o'clock on the Wayne Eddy Affair on KYMN. Actually, it's 10, 19, 30, 40, whatever. We're going to take
a
brief break. We're talking about the good, the bad, and the ugly at St. Paul for the state legislature with a gentleman that is our representative right now. But when is the official retirement day, month?
I officially will cease to be the representative for the district when my successor is sworn in.
Okay.
In January.
We'll be right back.
Joe Meyer Seeds in Hampton wants you to know about this Saturday's Randolph Hampton Fire District Barbecue and Street Dance. Come to Randolph Fire Hall, enjoy some barbecue chicken, and stay for the music. This fall, remember Joe Meyer Seeds, your local Golden Harvest and DeKalb seed dealer.
Your home, auto, and life are important to you. That's why the Northfield Insurance Agency works hard to provide you with the right protection. Kevin and Stan offer the products you need with the premier service you deserve. They carry business, auto, farm, homeowners, commercial, and bonds. Northfield Insurance is your independent agent, and they're connected with many insurance companies providing you with the lowest possible rates. That's the Northfield Insurance Agency.
Fox Landscaping is known for their creative landscape design and installation. Mike Fox has over 30 years doing design work, brick patios, driveways, and walkways. Call Mike at 645-9091. That's Fox Landscaping of Northfield.
Good, Mike. I like Mike. Hey, we are talking to David Bly. He is the state legislator, and we're talking about the good, the bad, and the ugly. He's retiring once a new legislator is voted in our district. And what was the biggest disappointment or surprise to you when you got up there? Lobbyists, let's talk about them. Do they wear a lapel pin or do they wear a badge or anything? How do you know who is the lobbyist? Because they have to be a registered lobbyist. And how do they come at you?
Well, there are lots of different, as with any group of people, there are lots of different kinds of lobbyists. Some of them might wear a lapel pin representing the organization that they're in, but no, you don't necessarily know ahead of time, although they do publish a book every year of all of the registered lobbyists, and you can go online and also look them up if you want to make sure you know who they are. But the book has their picture and who they represent, and sometimes they represent multiple groups or interests. And then there are those that are exclusively hired by Xcel Energy or some other large entity that has a lot of lobbyists there. The good lobbyists want to give you information, and they sometimes will even tell you, well, you're going to hear these kinds of criticisms if you support this issue or whatever it is that we're promoting. And they'll of course, present their argument as best they can. But the good ones really, I think, understand that this is a decision that you have to make. They want you to decide for them, but they're not going to be dishonest or sugarcoated in a way that, they may sugarcoat it some, but not in a way that's going to mislead you or leave you open to some kind of surprise later on. And they want to, because they have two things in mind. They, of course, want to promote what it is that they're telling you, but they want to develop a positive relationship with you so that you can trust them to give you good evidence. And perhaps you might even approach them during a session when you need information about, well, so I'm hearing this from the other side. What can you tell me? How would you answer that? Or, you know, what do you think about what they're saying? And if they're good, they'll give you a straight answer. The ones that that are a little more concerning might be ones that track you down or follow you, or you know, they just present their own side of things, or they're not so interested in developing a relationship, or it's pretty transparent what they're trying to do. You know, that.
Do they go to the whip and say David Bly isn't in line with this? And then they go to the whip and they say, and they come down to you and say, hey, I want to support this and you're negative on it. Let's get together on this.
In my experience, I don't know what it's like in the on the other side of the aisle. In my experience with the Democratic whips that we've had, unless it was, and this would have been very rare, unless it was something that was really needed on our side, I wouldn't get pressure from a whip. What they do is they come around, they say they want to know how you're voting. And that's because the number count is really important. The leadership doesn't know what to do if they don't have the votes. You know, if they don't have the votes, they're not going to bring a bill up, or they're not going to support a bill if they don't have the votes. So that's what's key. And I think my caucus generally understood that we represent different districts, and something that might be popular in one district isn't necessarily going to be popular in another. And so they don't want to pressure you to do something that's going to cause you to be unelected. You know, they want to make sure that your constituencies would support you. And so either if you're going to vote a different way than what maybe the majority of your constituents have, you want to make sure you can explain your vote. You know, that they will understand and still support you. But there are times when, you know, they'll even say, the whip will even come and say to you, you should not be, we want this passed, but you should not support it because your district doesn't support it.
Wow, that surprises me. You mentioned numbers. Mm-hmm. Do you know the number of legislators, people in the Senate and the legislature? How many are there? A total of, is it 401?
No. So I think it's like 187 in the House, and so it'd be half that in the Senate.
Okay. Well,
60-some.
In Washington, there's 401.
Yeah, that's right.
And when I was the liaison for the National Association of Broadcasters in Minnesota, when we went to the Hill and lobbied in Washington, it was one on 401.
Because
we were going to every single legislature.
Yeah, yeah.
And for us, it was hard.
Yeah,
for California, they have so many darn congressmen that, you know. And then we came back on a plane, and North Dakota had like four. You know, two senators and two congressmen.
They actually have one congressman, so it's three.
Was that? Yeah, okay. And they had an easy job.
Yeah, that's right.
But I was happy with the way that when we worked with the state legislatures, we let them know months in advance that on this particular day we are coming, and would you set aside times for us so we can go in and lobby for what we wanted.
Yes, right. And in many cases, groups like yours will make an appointment with all the legislators, and on this day we're coming in, and they'll sign up to come and see you. And I've always tried to make, even if it was a group that I wasn't totally in line with, I would try to meet with them, you know, because I felt the responsibility as their legislator to hear them out.
It's a 10:28 on the Wayne Eddy Affair. Representative David Bly is my guest on Kim. We're talking about the good, the bad, and the ugly. What were things that you were surprised about when in reference to how that whole thing is run? And did you feel like it was organized and you were part of it, or did you feel like you were kind of like an outsider till I serve a little more time? Were you intimidated at first?
I would say, to a degree, yes, I was somewhat intimidated by people who'd been there longer. There were some members who made no bones about saying, if you're new, you should be seen but not heard. You know, don't try to get up and capture the attention of people, although there were some freshman legislators who did, you know, who felt they like to hear themselves talk, and that's why they got there. So, and but on the other hand, though, people would remind you, you know, you have an election certificate. You represent your district. You have every right, as much as somebody who's been there for 30 years or somebody who's been there for two, to get up and speak. And if you have a something to say, say it. You know, so there was kind of both. I was surprised, though, that Senator Neville, who was my senator at the time, warned me about this. He said, "You know, when you get into debate on the floor of the House or the Senate, it's not like you imagine. People are not really on either side are not really going to be persuaded or listening to each other that much. You know, I mean, you can give a powerful speech and." The various leadership they're counting their votes. They want to make sure that they get people to stick with it. And so you might have this debate that where you are both talking about your own sides of things, a lot of it being directed outward to the press or to people out in their constituencies, whether they were lobbyists or constituents, trying to persuade them rather than trying to persuade someone across the aisle who might vote against what you're saying. So what I'm saying, I guess, is that regardless of how powerful your speech was or how much you believed in it or how truthful it was hard to persuade people.
When what's it like when you are assigned an office space? I was surprised when I saw that they had like one secretary, I'll call it, for several individuals. Would that her or him keep, do secretarial work for both parties, or just
no,
it's always
okay? So there's legislative staff,
thank you,
and legislative assistants are what you're describing as
okay.
The kind of secretary type person. So, when after an election, after the majority minority is decided. Certain monies are allocated. You know, the legislature gets money from tax revenues, whatever, you know, and it's divided based on who's in the majority and who's in the minority. I mean, if there's more people to represent, to cover, you get more money if you're in the majority. So you'll notice in the majority that in the House, it's different in the Senate, because the Senate, a senator will hire his or her own legislative assistant, and they have just one assistant per senator.
And so they last as long as he or she lasts as senator.
They can. I mean,
yeah. He's out, they're probably out.
Yeah. They might find another position with another senator, but
okay.
but that's true.
Okay.
In the House, on regardless of whether you're majority or minority, there's staff that hires legislative assistants. So you don't have any real say about who you get as a legislative assistant until you've got them. And then if you're unhappy, you can complain to the legislative staff who hired them, and you know, maybe they'll find someone else for you or do some shifting around, whatever. And if you're in the majority, you get two legislators per legislative assistant. And if you're in the minority, it's three. So you share that legislative assistant in the minority with two other people. And they are responsible for, you know, taking phone calls, making appointments, making sure that you know kind of where your bills are and things like that, and helping you stay organized and on top of things, making sure you know when your appointments are. And so for each legislator, they print out a schedule every day and hand it to you when you come in, you know, so you know what your agenda is for that day, where you have to be, what meetings you have, and what you may not know is your appointments for people coming in to see you.
And that's a thing that always has interested me, is how you get on committees and how do you get to be the chairman of that committee, and how they can block anything on the committee level and it never gets to the floor.
Right.
That's got to be frustrating, or
yeah,
it can feel
yeah.
awfully, hey, a victory.
Yes, exactly. So after the election, when it's determined who's in the majority and who's in the minority, the majority leadership, the person who's going to be the speaker, has a staff with him, and they ask all of the incoming legislators, whether they're reelected or elected for the first time, to submit a list of committees they'd like to serve on. And you may not get all of the committees that you want because there's only so much space on each committee, and you're not sure who you're competing with to get on a certain committee. They do try, I think, to give you the committees that you want, but it's, you know, it's a challenge to get it all scheduled and organized. The other challenging thing is that there are some committees that meet at the same time on the same day. So if you chose two that happened with, you'd only get one. You wouldn't get both of them. And so they might come back to you and say, well, which do you prefer? Would you prefer higher education or the health care, health and human services? And so that you have to sort that out. As far as committee chairs go, that's something that a veteran legislator would probably lobby for with the new speaker. And the speaker has to be elected by the majority, too, so before they can, you know, move to that situation where they're figuring out who's going to be the committee chairs. It's a highly sought-after position because it does give you control. Some people would rather be a committee chair than be the Speaker of the House, because if they pursued a certain interest area, like education or something like that, they have the power to decide what's going to happen in the future. So
so do they take a vote and the majority wins on the committee level? And the committee chairperson can steer the meeting.
Yep.
And ask to get other people put on that particular position, so that they get a.
I don't know I imagine a chair could lobby for someone to be on that committee. I don't think that happens as much because I think the process is shorter. You know. I think, for instance, if I came to a committee chair and said, I really want to be on your committee, I didn't get on your committee, can you see what you can do about that? That might happen. I think before the decisions are made, it's harder to do that kind of lobbying because of the compression of time.
I remember when Steve Swigum was speaker.
Sure.
And he was showing me his office. And comparatively speaking, that was a real nice office.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, it had windows and showers and two rooms or
that's
whatever.
Right. Yeah, the speaker's office is.
Yeah, they take care of the speaker's office.
They do. Yeah, they do.
Any gerrymandering that you remember?
Well, because the state legislature and the governor had, for the past many times at we've had redistricting. Have not been of the same party, it's much more difficult to gerrymander, because what happens when the legislature submits their plan for redistricting, the governor can veto it. And if the governor vetoes it, it goes then to the courts to decide what the new lines will be. And this is the way it's been after redistricting in Minnesota history for decades, because the two sides can't come together and agree on a fair legislative map. So I would say that it's far less likely, because it's a nonpartisan group, the courts deciding this, that it's going to be gerrymandered. I have not seen in Minnesota that kind of gerrymandering that you might see, say, in Wisconsin, or where you've had during the redistricting year a party in charge of all divisions of government. So it's harder to gerrymander.
How does the Minnesota State Legislature work when it comes to supporting or not supporting? For example, we've got the Attorney General race, mm-hmm. and Ellison is involved in that.
He is now the Democratic candidate, won the primary.
How much goes on the legislative level on showing support for a candidate or showing a dislike?
Okay, so it's a little bit complicated, because if you're the legislature cannot itself advocate for anyone in an election, because that's a different thing. So that doesn't mean that as a caucus, separate from being in the legislature, the DFL couldn't support someone. So you might have legislators outside of the House of Representatives going and campaigning for someone, or, you know, door knocking for them, or even donating money to them, you know, not from their campaign accounts, but from their own pocket. The legislature itself is supposed to act in a way that doesn't influence an election, but outside of the legislature, individuals or as a group separate from the legislature, they can. Yeah.
But it's still pretty obvious that there is support or is not support as they act individually.
Yeah.
And so the conception is that this is a Democrat-Republican deal.
Yeah.
It's 21 minutes before 11 o'clock. We are talking to State Representative David Bly, who is retiring from his position after 10 years.
Live the legend and throw axes with your friends at the all-new Battle Axe Pub. Visit Magic, the live unicorn, hug a kangaroo, pet an African porcupine, or hand-feed a grape to a ring-tailed lemur. Soar over the crowd at the Wizard's Flight School Zipline. Have a blast at the new Bow Blast competition. The Minnesota Renaissance Festival. Family fun for one and all. Weekends and Labor Day through September 30th. Discount tickets at Super America, Cub, Menards, Dunn Brothers, and online at renaissancefest.com.
Navigating the real estate market can be tough. Luckily, there is help available. Contact Professional Pride Realty and let the professionals help you every step of the way. From deciding if now is the time to buy or sell, through final inspection, Professional Pride Realty is there for you.
Celebrate summer and the beauty of roses at this year's Kenyon Rose Fest, Friday through Sunday. Sell your stuff at the citywide garage sale on Friday and hang out with your family at the free pool party from 8 to 10 p.m. Get down to live music both nights at the Kenyon Muni, featuring West Side Band on Friday night and Lost Highway on Saturday. Finish up the weekend with the Field of Flags closing ceremony at Veterans Park at 2 p.m. on Sunday, featuring the Bell of Honor. It's the Kenyon Rose Fest this weekend in Kenyon.
Nope, sorry. At 20 minutes before 11 o'clock, here comes the big one, David. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay. First of all, I think people run for office because they have a conviction and a sincerity. Then we have lifetime politicians who get all these great, wonderful benefits. And I'm talking more federal than I am state. But I think that people... how do you have somebody in the state legislature? How much? When do you meet in a two-year election? You're a representative. How often are you at the state capitol?
Well, it varies. You know, if I'm in the majority, I might be there. You know, I'm there every day during when we're in session.
And how many days is that?
I should know that. I'm sorry, I don't.
But
from January until the end of May.
May, okay, 5 months.
And then when I'm not in, when we're not in session, I try to be up there at least once a week or more often, depending upon what I might be working on or meeting with people.
Well, what I'm wondering is that do the people know what your salary is? I mean, it's supposed to be public.
Yeah, and it is published from time to time.
And how much is that?
Well, I don't remember exactly when what, you know, it changed recently, as you well know.
Right, that's what I'm asking.
It was about 31,000 prior to the change, and now it's probably something like 45. I'm not sure. I can't remember. So it did make a leap, you know. And I think that, I think it makes it, as the demands are placed on legislators, I think we're close to being, as you know, because we've had special sessions a number of years, we're getting closer to being a full-time legislature. And so it's, and it is demanding, even, even though I, as I said, I'm up there maybe once a week or more often, I do sometimes have meetings in my district or meetings with people that I don't count in that because I'm not up. And actually, I think that's the way it should be. We should be available and out and visiting with people in our districts when we're not in session.
And that brings me per diem.
Yeah.
And so you get that 45, did you say, base salary?
I maybe shouldn't say because I don't remember exactly what it is.
But then you get...
To be very honest with you, Wayne, I don't pay that much attention to it. I probably should.
But in my heart, I think you are the one person that I can ask these questions to.
Sure.
And if you don't have knowledge, that's fine. But if you do know, you'll
share. I don't mind the question. Yeah. I just wish I had the answer for you.
So if you is it 40 or 45,000?
Right in between. Yeah,
then.
I suppose okay. It's in between. Yeah.
And then you have per diem.
Yep.
And then people can say you work 5 months a year, and you're making that. I would love to make $45,000 a year. And get a per diem for the time I'm working in my district or doing committee work.
You get per diem when you're involved in committee work.
Right.
And but it isn't all the time. You don't get it every day when you're not in session.
But the bottom line is, I can say, you know what? That's a part-time job, and you're making $45,000. And I'm not saying you, David Bly. I'm saying you, state legislator. I can live on that. But I also have my responsibility at work, and particularly you take government employees that win elections, teachers, they get the time off, and they get to do their legislative work, and there's compensation, etc. And then you get a real nice retirement package, I understand. You tell me if I'm wrong. And you get pretty much the legacy of being a legislator and benefits even after you retire. That's a pretty good gig.
Well, I suppose in some respects you could say, who do you want to represent you? You know, I mean, do you want to have someone who is independently wealthy and doesn't need to be reimbursed or have some promise of being taken care of later on? Or do you want someone who maybe isn't of means, might have the abilities, but is willing to represent you if they get those kinds of benefits or whatever? I mean, to be honest with you, when I was running, I didn't know any of that. I didn't pay any attention to it at all. So
I believe you.
Yeah, yeah.
You were probably pleasantly surprised.
Well, I would say the... It doesn't, you know, a legislator's duties and pay does not completely match up with a teacher's because you have to take a leave of absence when you would be, and that's with a leave of absence without pay. So you lose that income, and the income of a legislator is substantially less than a teacher would make if you were working. So for me, it was a cut in pay. That didn't bother me, but when I retired from teaching, I realized I was in some cases, some months, borrowing more money than I was comfortable doing because that's how I could survive.
Mm-hmm.
The traveling that you do, going to meetings with people and getting up to the legislature every day, those are things that I appreciated being compensated for because it would have been tough to make it without that. So, you know, asking someone who maybe isn't of tremendous means to represent you and yet, you know, take a cut in pay and have to borrow money if you look at on both sides of the aisle, you look at some legislators who are running the number of times that they refinanced their house in order to continue to live there.
Mm-hmm.
It surprised me. You know, fortunately, I didn't have to do that, but some did.
See, you're 11. You're 66, right?
66.
11 years younger than me.
Okay.
When you're my age, will you still be getting money from the state of Minnesota as a former legislator?
So
that's what I'm...
Yeah. The retirement plan only goes into effect after you've served a couple terms. So people who didn't serve beyond that don't get that compensation.
Okay.
I'm sure it used to be different earlier on, but that's the way it is now. And looking at my, which is an investment that I made by taking some of my salary and putting it into, account. So it isn't like a free gift that you didn't contribute to at all. is not huge by any means. I mean,
what is a match on something like that? One and one, two and one.
You can arrange that. You can decide how you want that to work out when you're signing up for it. I can't remember. I'm sorry. I can't remember what mine is. But it's not a it's not a huge amount of money. So yes, and I haven't talked to the business office about what my retirement plan will be like when I retire. But they do send me announcements of kind of what I can expect. But it's not huge. I mean,
you know that the senators and the congressmen in Washington, D.C. take care of themselves.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, period, amen. All this talk about insurance, and it comes to the fact they have their own insurance program, and you can't have it.
That's right.
Did they have any plan like that in our state?
The insurance plans that we have, I mean, I don't think it's dramatically different than you would have with most large employers. I mean, a small employer can't necessarily provide the same kind of health care plan, but I don't think it's outrageous. We're kind of subject to the same kind of rules that others are. It's not at all like you see at the federal level, the health insurance plan. So, I mean, we have co-pays, we have deductibles. They're probably better than if you were in the independent market, much better than if you were in the independent market.
Does that continue even after retirement?
No.
You can't opt on it?
Well, you could do a COBRA.
Okay.
But then you're picking up the whole tab rather than the part that...
I'm running out of time here, and I'm going to take a break. And here's what I'd like to ask you. Remember, good, the bad, and the ugly? What was the ugliest thing that ever happened that you shook your head and said, man, that was really bad? In the state legislature.
Okay.
And I'll be back in 90 seconds. Kind of give you a little time to think about that.
All right.
David, I like you.
Yeah, I know you do.
Okay, all right.
And I like you too, Wayne.
All right. We will be right back.
Hi, this is Sarah Hoffman from the Syngenta Research Station in Stanton. This Saturday, the Randolph Hampton Fire District will host their annual chicken barbecue on the main street of Randolph. After having dinner at the barbecue and supporting our local volunteer fire department, we encourage you to contact your local Syngenta retailer for a tour of our demo plots to see our products in action. Here at Syngenta, we work hard bringing plant potential to life. We at Syngenta live and work in the communities surrounding Stanton and are proud supporters of our community events and hope you can take in the Randolph Chicken Barbecue this Saturday.
The skills you can develop as a soldier in the Army National Guard can give you an edge in the high-tech job market of tomorrow. The Guard offers career training to take advantage of your skills in science, technology, engineering, and math that can help give you a leg up to a high-paying and rewarding STEM profession. Get a head start on your career while earning money to pay for college. Log on to NationalGuard.com to learn about all of the STEM career opportunities in the Army National Guard.
Sponsored by the Minnesota Army National Guard. Aired by the Minnesota Broadcasters Association and this station.
Hi, this is Steve DeLong, manager of the Northfield Liquor Store. We invite you to come in and check out our great selection of fine wines from around the globe. With nearly 2,000 different labels to choose from, we can help you find the right wine to fit your taste and your budget, no matter what the occasion. You can find all your favorites right here in downtown Northfield at the Muni, where profits directly support the community.
We're back on the Wayne Eddy Affair on KYMN Radio out of Northfield, Minnesota, 1080 on your AM dial, and now 95.1 FM. And my guest this morning is legislator David Bly at 8 minutes before 11 o'clock. And I asked if we could talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly. We got the good done. We got the bad done. I just happened to notice your T-shirt. What is that a picture of?
I think the cupola on top of Iterbo Hall.
That I knew it. I knew that looked familiar.
Yeah.
So what's the ugliest thing you ever, you got up there and you went, boy, was I naive?
Well, I guess I was surprised at the last biennium that the Republican leadership was so dismissive of the minority. In a sense, ruling on you know, when it was, so in the course or the process of a legislative day, if someone introduces an amendment, it can be ruled not germane. And I can, this is just an example, but so I can remember times when a Republican would introduce an amendment and it would be accepted, and because it all comes down to a vote. If you have the votes to add an amendment, there's no stopping it. If you don't, you have to get votes from the other side. So an amendment is introduced on the Democratic side, and rather than take a vote, the Speaker would reinforce an objection from a member saying that it was not germane, that it didn't have anything to do with it. Almost exactly the same as the previous amendment that was introduced, but it came from the wrong side. And that kind of, to me, that's unfair. That's a misuse of the rules. And to not even have once when the Speaker would interpret in favor of the minority as opposed to the majority on that kind of issue disturbed me. I can remember when Speaker Thiessen was in the Speaker's chair, he sometimes would rule against the majority on germaneness because he knew that it was purely a political motion. And I think he tried hard to be fair.
Does the governor have veto power?
Well, once a bill is passed, yeah.
So if the majority got this bill introduced and you have a governor that is in the minority, he can just say, well, you guys worked hard on it. They did things with the germane ruling. I'm just going to say no.
That's true. That's true. So there are a lot of different reasons that votes are taken and things get passed. And sometimes it is pure politics. It doesn't have anything to do with it. You have a hope that you're going to. I mean, there are times when I think bills get passed and they hope the governor will veto it. Because then they can come back and say, see, the governor doesn't want that. And if it's popular among the voters, the governor will have to pay for that in some way.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And so sometimes the legislature is very political in
now,
that way.
Minnesota is well known for their soybean, their corn, mm-hmm. and their milk.
Yes.
And there have been tariffs introduced and passed in some areas. Have you had any feedback from your people?
First, let me just say the tariffs have not been voted on. They're just something that the president introduced. And he's introduced them saying that there's a security risk. So we have to have these tariffs, for instance, against Canada. And his evidence that Canada was a threat to us was saying that, well, they burned down our White House once back in the early days of America. Well, it actually wasn't the Canadians that burned it; it was the British. But fine point, I guess. At any rate, back to your question. yes, I have heard farmers who are looking at drops in soybean prices. I've heard from dairy farmers say the moment that the tariffs were announced, milk, cheese took a cut, and so we're hurting, and the news says this is going to be a record crop for soybeans and corn, and that's not good news because it means prices will drop further. There's a ship out in the South China Sea looking for a port to deliver its produce to because they can't find a buyer for the corn they've got because the retaliatory tariffs on soybeans. So, the tariffs have hurt. I think there are some who hold out hope that trust the president or think the president's got the right idea that China will back down. I'm not seeing that in what I'm hearing. I'm hearing that the Chinese kind of have the upper hand here, and that those soybean growers may lose their market share. You know, the Brazilians who grow to soybeans are picking up the slack, and it may be difficult to displace them after the tariffs go away. So. It's a very worrisome time for farmers. It really is.
I think it's a very worrisome time for everybody.
I agree.
And
I agree.
Disregard Republican, Democrat, Independent, it just things are just always seem to have so much negative energy.
Right.
That's the way I describe it. And I'm glad that I'm not going to be around in 30 years.
Yeah.
Because I don't know what's going
to
happen.
One of the things that bothers me about that, going back to your question about what surprises or what's the ugliness of it, is that my sense is it's gotten a lot harder to solve the basic problems that we ought to solve in government. I mean, our purpose is to do this. And I attribute a lot of it to the influence of big money in our politics, and that it's no longer... I mean, I tried really hard to represent my constituents and the people who came to me with a problem that I could try to solve. One of the things that's most frustrating for me is that we haven't really solved the healthcare problem. And whether people agree with me or not, I think that a kind of single-payer proposal or policy would solve a lot of problems for people's health care and their access to health care. And yet, I've only had one hearing on that bill that I introduced with John Marty. I like it or not, disagree with it or not, let's debate it. Let's talk about whether or not it would work. And that doesn't happen.
Well, this is kind of ending. It's almost 11 o'clock. And I think we both agree on one thing, and that is, can't we all just get along? Can't you just forget the fighting between the parties and just focus on what's good for America? And I don't care where you're left or you're right. Have you ever had that feeling? I wish we could just get along.
Absolutely. I think we have to rise above our need to win or to be in power, driven by ego more than anything else, perhaps. But I think what makes that more challenging or more difficult is that the two parties are further and further apart. So it's harder to come together and compromise or do that. And I think that's really unfortunate.
Well, it's 11 o'clock on KYMN, 1080 AM. And it is 95.1 FM, the one. And I just realized that this is August 17th, and on this date, I moved to Northfield, Minnesota. So I've been here 50 years.
Great. Congratulations.
Thank you. Do you consider me a townie?
I do, but, you know,
good.
I came here in the third grade, and there are times when I wonder if people think I'm a townie.
Well, I think they know you're a townie. Any last words you want to say in reference to...
Yes, thank you. I want to say a thank you to the voters in the 20B district for sending me to St. Paul to represent them and having the trust and faith in me to do that. And I really appreciate the opportunity to have served.
Well, David, it's always been a pleasure for those five terms to talk to you. We disagreed on some things, and yet I like you. You know, we get along very fine. And we resisted any real